Yasoda Nandana Prajajana Ranjana. Amunatiravanachari Amunatiravanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we are reading an extensive number of verses. It even surpasses yesterday's extensive number of verses. So we'll be reading from the 9th canto, the 24th chapter. So it'll be verse 36 through the text, which is actually three verses in one, 53 to 55, and 53 is on the board. So I'm going to read the Sanskrit and the English translation and then come up to text 53 to 55. So. So you have a long time of listening or looking on the devices. It sort of reminds me of, you know, sometimes one goes into places and they have neutral music that just goes on and on. Well, of course, this is not neutral, but it will be very long, the recitation of the verses. So text 36. Tarha satya jan nadi tarje kritra lokasya bibhyati prapita mahastan uvaham pandurvai satya vikramaham. And the translation to text 36 is, because Kunti feared people's criticism, with great difficulty, she had to give up her affection for her child. Unwillingly, she packed the child in a basket and let it float down the water of the river. O Maharaj Parikshit, your great-grandfather, the pious and chivalrous King Pandu, later married Kunti. Text 37. Shuta devam tu karusho Rita Sharma Samagrahit Yasyam Abud Dantavakra Rishi Shapta Dite Shutaha. And the translation to text 37. Vritarashrena, the king of Karusha, married Kunti's sister, Shuta Devi, and from her womb, Dantavakra was born. Having been cursed by the sages headed by Shanaka, Dantavakra had formerly been born as the son of Diti named Hiranyaksha. Text 38. Kaikeyo dritakitushcha shrutakirtima vindata santadanadayastasyam panchasan kaikaya shutaha. And the translation for text 38. King Drishtaketu, the king of Kakaya, married Shrutakirti, another sister of Kunti's. Shrutakirti had five sons, headed by Santardana. Text 39. Rajadi Vyam Avanchyan Jayaseno Janistaha Dharma Goshas Chedi Rajaha Shrutashravasham Agrahit. And the translation for text 39. Through the womb of Rajadhi Devi, another sister of Kunti's, Jayasena begot two sons named Vinda and Anuvinda. Similarly, the king of the Chedi state married Shrutashrava. This king's name was Dhammaghosha. Text 40. Shishupala Shuta Sutas Tasya Shatitas Tasya Sambhavaha Deva Bhagasya Kamasya Kamashayam Chitraketu Brihad Balam. And the translation for text 40. The son of Shrutashvara was Shishupal, whose birth has already been described in the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Vasudeva's brother named Devabhaga had two sons born of his wife Kamsa. These two sons were Chitraketu and Brihadbala. Text 41. Kamsavachyani deva shravasham suvira ishumam statam bakaha kankatu kankayam satyajit purujit satam. In the translation for text 41, Vasudev's brother named Devashrava married Kamsavati, by whom he begot two sons named Suvira and Ishuman. Kanka, by his wife Kanka, begot three sons named Baka, Satyajit, and Purujit. Text 42. Shrajayo Rastrapalyam cha Rishta Durmar Shana Dikshan Harikesha Hiranyaksha Shura Bumyam Chashyamakaha. And the translation for text 42. King Sri Jaya, by his wife Rastrapalika, begot sons headed by Risha and Durmarashana. King Shyamaka, by his wife Surabhumi, begot two sons named Hrishikesh and Hiranyaksha. So text 43. Mishrakeshyam Aparashi Viradadin Vatsakas Tata Taksha Pushkara Shatadin Durvakshyam Vrika Adadadhim. The translation for text 43. Thereafter, King Vatsaka, by the womb of his wife Mishrakeshi, who was an Apsara, begot sons headed by Vrika. Vrika, by his wife, Durvakshi, begot Taksha, Pushkara, Shala, and so on. Text 44. Sumitrarjuna Paladin, Samikatsu Sudamani, Anakaha Karnikayan, by Ritadama Jayan Api. And the translation for text 44. From Samika, by the womb of his wife Sudamani, came Sumitra, Arjuna Pala, and other sons. King Anaka, by his wife Karnika, begot two sons, namely Ritadama and Jaya. Text 45.
Horavi Rohini Badra Madira Rochana Ila Devaki Pramukhas Chasan Patnya Anakadundube.
And the translation for text 45. Devaki, Horavi Rohini Badra Madira Rochana Ila and others were all wives of Anakadundubi Vasudev. Among them all, Devaki was the chief. Text 46.
Balam gadam saranam cha durmadam vipulam dhruvam vasudevastu rohinyam kirtadin utapadayat.
And the translation for text 46. Vasudev, by the womb of his wife Rohini, begot sons such as Bala, Gada, Sarana, Durmada, Vipula, Dhruva, Krita, and others. And text 47 through 48.
Subhadro Badraha Badra Bahus Cha Durmado Badra Eva Cha Poravyas Tanaya Eva Cha Bhutajya Davadasa Bhavan Nando Pananda Kritaka Surajya Madiratmaja Koshalya Keshinam Tsu Ekam Asuta Kula Nandanam.
And the translation for text 47 through 48. From the womb of Poravi came 12 sons, including Bhuta, Subhadra, Badrabahu, Durmada, and Badra, Nanda, Upananda, Kritaka, Sura, and others were born from the womb of Madira. Badra, Kamsalya, gave birth to only one son, named Keshi. Text 49.
Rochanayam stojala hasta hemanga dagadayaha ilayam urval kadin yadomukyan ajijanat.
And the translation to text 49. Vasudev, by another of his wives, whose name was Rochana, begot Hasta, Hemangada, and other sons. And by his wife named Ila, he begot sons headed by Uruvalka, all of whom were chief personalities in the dynasty of Yadu. Text 50.
Viprishto Dirtadevayam Eka Anankandundubihe Shanti Devata Maya Rajan Prashama Prasiti Dayaha.
Text 50. Translation. From the womb of Ritadeva, one of the wives of Anakandundubi Vasudev, came a son named Viprishta. The sons of Shantideva, another wife of Vasudev, were Prasanna, Prasita, and others. Text 51. Rajanya Kalpa Vashadya Upadeva Sutadasha Vasuhamsa Suvamshadyaha Sri Devayastu Satsutaham. The translation for text 51. Vasudeva also had a wife named Upadeva, from whom came 10 sons headed by Rajanyu, Kalpa, and Varsha. From Sri Deva, another wife, came 6 sons, such as Vasu, Hamsa, and Suvamsa. Text 52. Devarakshitaya labdha nava chatra gadadayaha vasudeva sutan asta vastade sahadevaya. The translation for text 52. By the semen of Vasudeva in the womb of Devarakshita, 9 sons were born, headed by Gada. Vasudeva, who was religion personified, also had a wife named Sahadeva, by whose womb he begot 8 sons, headed by Shruta and Pravara. And finally, we come to text 53 to 55. So 53 is on the board, and we can chant responsively. And then I'll read the remainder, 54 and 55. Pravara Shruta Mukhayam Sham Shakshat Dharmo Varshunivam Vasudevas Tu Devakyam Asta Putra Naji Janat Pravara Shruta Mukhayam Scha Shakshat Dharmo Varshunivam Vasudevas tu devakyam Asta putranaji janat Pravara shrutra mukhyam scham Shakshat dharmo vasunivam Vasudevas tu devakyam Asta putra naji janat. Please chant. Pravara shruta mukhyamscha Shakshat dharmo vasunivam Vasudevas tu devakyam Asta putra naji janat. Pravara Shruta Mukhyamscha Shakshat Dharmo Vajunivam Vasudevas Tu Devakyam Asta Putra Naji Janat Pravara Shruta Mukhyamscha Shakshat dharmo vasuniva Vasudevas tu devakyam Asta putra naji janat. Okay, so continuing with text 54. Kirtimantam sushenam cham Bhadrasenam udarad Dihi Rujun Samardhanam Badram Sankarshan Ahishvaram Astamastu Tayor Asit Svayam Eva Hari Kila Subhadracha Mahabhaga Tavarajan Pitamahi. So the translation or text 53355. Oh, I should do the word for word. I'll just do the word for word for 53 that's on the board. Pravara. In some readings, povara. Shruta. Mukyan. Headed by. Cham. And. Shakshat. Directly. Dharmaham. Religion personified. Vasunivam. Exactly like the chief Vasus in the heavenly kingdom. Vasudevam. Srila Vyasadev, the father of Krishna. To, indeed, Devakyan, in the womb of Devaki. Asta, 8. Putran, sons. Ajijanat, beget. Okay. Yes, it was begot. It's in our past tense. Okay. So I'll read the translation. The 8 sons born of Sahadev, such as Pravara and Shruta, were exact incarnations of the 8 Vasus in the heavenly planets. Vasudev also begot 8 highly qualified sons through the womb of Devaki. These included Kirtiman, Shushena, Bhadrashena, Rija, Samardana, Bhadra, and Sankarshan, the controller and serpent incarnation. The 8th son was the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, Krishna. The highly fortunate Subhadra, the one daughter, was your grandmother. Purport. The 55th verse says, Svayam eva hari kila, indicating that Krishna, the 8th son of Devaki, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna is not an incarnation. Although there is no difference between the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari and his incarnation, Krishna is the original Supreme Person, the complete Godhead. Incarnations exhibit only a certain percentage of the potencies of Godhead. The complete Godhead is Krishna himself, who appeared as the 8th son of Devaki. Om Agyana Timarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Namom Vishnu Padai Krishna Prasthai Bhutale Srimati Rama Padaswami Iti Namine. Namom Vishnu Padai Krishna Prasthai Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nivishesha Sunyavadi Paschacha Deshatarine. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhar, Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanchakalpa Tiruvyascha, Kripa Sanduvyevacha, Patitanam, Pavanebhyo, Vaishnebhyo, Namo Namaha. Okay, so we're continuing with the breakdown. So going back a little bit, it was King Sura and his queen Marisha who had begot 10 sons, one of which was Vasudev, the others were Devashrava, Anaka, Srinjaya, Shyamaka, Kanka, Samika, Vatsaka, and Vrika. There were also 5 daughters. So I'm tracing this back because it'll lead into where we've come today. There were also 5 daughters of King Sura and Queen Marisha, and those were Prita, and yesterday this was pointed out, who came to be known as Kunti, because she was adopted by King Kunti. Since King Sura gave this particular daughter, Prita, to his childless friend, King Kunti. And then there was also Shrutadeva, Shrutakirti, Shrutashvara, and Rajadi Devi. And you may recognize the names from having read today's verses. So these were the five daughters that came from King Shura and his queen Marisha. So there's a breakdown in the section that we've read today of the sons that are begot by Kunti. So now she's one of the five sisters that came from King Sura and Queen Marisha. And so this breakdown begins with the sons that were begot by Kunti's sisters, so the five sisters, and their respective husbands. So in each case, they married a particular king. So, for example, King Pandu married Kunti, and we remember from just a little while back, we were reading who King Pandu is, that he was one of the children that Srila Vyasadeva begot in the womb of Ambalika, the queen of his half-brother, Vichitravirya. So we remember that from just a short while back. And now going on to the other sisters of Kunti, Shrutadeva is a sister, and she was married by King Vridasharma, and their son was Dantavakra. Now, this is very interesting because right away, you know, one is expecting to hear glorious personalities, and this particular son immediately on the second listing of the sister of Kunti, this Shrutadeva and King Vridasharma, the son that they produce, Dantavakra, is actually labeled as a godless atheist. And he's categorized, he's put into the same category as Hiranyakashipu, Kamsa, and Ravana. And so actually in a previous life, this Dantavakra was actually Hiranyaksha, who was born in the dynasty of Bali Maharaj. So now he's been born in the Yadu dynasty. He was taking birth in the Yadu dynasty, Dantavakra, but he was Hiranyaksha in Bali Maharaj's dynasty. And he is described, it's just a brief description, so anything we know of this personality from the previous life is that he was carrying only his own club. He wandered the globe alone, without assistance to conquer all directions, and no hero he met could rival him. So very powerful, but in Bali Maharaj's dynasty. So that's the previous birth. And here he is, he's arriving in this birth as one of the children of one of Kunti's sisters. So, and he's just, this was from the 8th canto, in the 19th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear about this personality. And Lord Vamanadev, he describes this personality, Hiranyaksha, or that was his description, I should say. That was Lord Vamanadev describing Hiranyaksha. So just that very brief description. And because he's categorized as falling into this category of a godless atheist, we have that category also described by Krishna, who are these four like entities that epitomize godless atheists. So this is Krishna's description. Those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest among men, I perpetually cast into the ocean of material existence into various demoniac species of life. So this is very interesting. Krishna's saying that perpetually those particular personalities remain in a demoniac species. But here we're hearing that, you know, Hiranyaksha has actually taken birth as Dantavakra, and is in the family of one of Kunti's sisters. So Now, one of the things that we, you know, can comprehend just based on Krishna saying that he maintains or he chooses the particular birth that those personalities take and he keeps them in the demoniac species of life, it's actually Krishna's prerogative, the particular birth that's accorded. And the verse I read was from 1619. the reason Krishna has this prerogative is if somebody doesn't choose to accept Krishna's supremacy, they're not willing to accept Krishna's supremacy and choose to act entirely on their own whims. So, naturally, Krishna's in that position, it's his prerogative. He keeps them in a demoniac species of life. Now, that was one sister. There's another sister of Prita or Kunti, and that's Rajadi Devi. She was married by King Jayasena, and they begot two sons, Vinda and Anuvinda. And it's very interesting, in this verse, when you read it, there's just one word. It says Avantyao. And I found it interesting because in the commentary of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he immediately says, Avantyao refers to two sons, Vinda and Anuvinda, and Srila Prabhupada puts that here too. So there's... a third sister of Kunti, so that's Shrutasrava, and she has a son named Shishupal. So, you know, the picture's beginning to emerge. Kunti's sisters are having these particular personalities that we recognize fall into the demoniac category. So he's described, this is the description of Shishupal, from the very beginning of his childhood, when he couldn't even speak properly. Shishupal, the most powerful son of Damagosha, so it was King Damagosha and Kunti's other sister, Rajadi Devi, he began blaspheming the Lord and he continued to be envious of Sri Krishna until death. So that's a description given of Shishupal. So, and continuing that description, this is from the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And similarly, his brother Dantavakra, that we've just heard about, he continued the same habits. So, cousins, and they're united in this, in these particular habits of constantly blaspheming Lord Krishna. Now, there's a section in the Bhagavatam that looks at, you know, these two personalities. And Maharaj Yudhisthira, he finds it very interesting, one thing. So I'm going to read what he says about these two personalities. And he's talking to Narada Muni. So he says, although these two men, Shishupal and Dantavakra, repeatedly blasphemed the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Brahman, they were quite healthy. So this is Yudhisthira talking, King Yudhisthira. Indeed, their tongues were not attacked by white leprosy, nor did they enter the darkest of hellish life. We are certainly most surprised by this. So this is Yudhisthira. He's a little bit surprised, you know, why didn't they, you know, they get some disease of the tongue? You know, the leprosy starts eating the tongue. So we find in Lord Chaitanya's pastime, somebody who's sort of blaspheming the Supreme Personality of God in leprosy is obtained. So Yudhisthira makes that connection. So he says they're blaspheming. Why aren't their tongues being struck by leprosy? And he's noticing they're quite healthy. Both of these personalities were perfectly healthy, Shishupal and Dantavakra. This is in the seventh canto in the first chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. And the explanation that's given is that in a former lifetime, Shishupal and Dantavakra were Jai and Vijay, the doorkeepers of Vaikuntha. And although if one blasphemes the Lord, his punishment is to remain in hellish life for many millions of years, even more than one would be suffering were one to have killed many brahmanas. But in Shishupal's case, instead of entering into hellish life, he actually easily received liberation, Sahuja Mukti. So Maharaj Yudhisthira is very surprised by all of this. So the explanation is just the particular curse that was cast upon these two personalities. So they had to live out the curse going through these demoniac births. So Narada Muni gives an explanation. So I'm trying to fill in something of the personalities in this breakdown. So this is particularly focusing on the sisters of Kunti and their marriages and what children were produced. So Narada Muni gives an explanation which challenges this underlying Maharaj Yudhisthira, which he expresses. He says, because of the bodily conception of life, the conditioned soul thinks that when the body is annihilated, the living being is annihilated. So Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the Supreme Controller, the Super Soul of all living entities. Because he has no material body, he has no false conception of I and mine. It is therefore incorrect to think that he feels pleasure or pain when blasphemed or offered prayers. This is impossible for him. Thus he has no enemy and no friend. So Maharaj Yudhisthira, Narada Muni, who's his spiritual master, is instructing him that he's actually thinking a little bit in terms of the body by thinking that actually Krishna would be affected in some way by the insults of Shishupal and Dantavakra. And he says that basically because Krishna doesn't have that kind of conception of me and mine, therefore if he's insulted or even if he's worshipped or prayed to, it's equivalent to him. He's not actually feeling pleasure or pain. This is how Narada Muni explains to Yudhisthira Maharaj. So he's trying to break, which is what a spiritual master does, tries to break into the concepts one has that are very much connected to one's identity of oneself as being either, you know, the physical body or the ego part or the mind. And so in this case, it's breaking down that ego conception that in some way there's insult felt by Krishna because of being insulted by Shishupal. Narada Muni actually says, no, actually Krishna's experiencing neither pain in that case or pleasure were he to have been praised through prayer. It's equivalent to him because he's not holding that egotistical conception of self. and then Narada Muni also explains to Yudhisthira Maharaj that when he chastises the demons, it's actually for their own good. And when he accepts the prayers of the devotees, it is also for their own good. So he means he's neither affected by prayers nor blasphemy. So this is the view given by Narada Muni to deal with Maharaj Yudhisthira's assumption, which was that actually these two demoniac entities should have literally had their tongues been eaten up by leprosy, and why wasn't it happening? So actually, it seems the problem was more Maharaj Yudhisthira having some sort of conception of body, and then Narada Muni having to clarify Krishna's actually been untouched by blasphemy. Then there's, it continues, the section that we've read. There's a breakdown of the children begot by Vasudev's brothers. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, there's just one line. It's in his commentary on Bhagavatam, it's exactly as was pointed out yesterday, this all these great personalities, they don't get up there a big write-up because it would take up so much space. It's the same thing in the commentary of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. No commentary except one difference, and that's this one. He says, there's a description of the wives of his nine brothers, meaning Srila Vasudev, Maharaj Vasudev. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says there's a description of the wives of his nine brothers and their children in 9.5 verses. That's his only commentary, nothing else. that's in the Sarita Darshini commentary. So one thing I just noticed in that those 9.5 verses is that Vasudev's brother, King Shamaka, by his wife Surabhumi, he begot two sons named Harikesh and Hiranyaksha. So because we've just heard who Hiranyaksha is, and it was from a previous birth of Dantavakra, we know it's not that Hiranyaksha. So that's the only thing I noticed in this particular breakdown. It's not the same personality, this Hiranyaksha that was born of one of Vasudev's brothers, King Shyamaka. because we know that actually that particular breakdown is that Hiranyaksha is not this Hiranyaksha, is not the same Hiranyaksha as that one of Satyayuga, because it was actually that Hiranyaksha became Hiranyakashipu, who became Ravana, and Kumbhakarna in Tetrayuga, and then it was in Vaipara Yuga, so just prior to our Yuga, that we find Shishupal and Dantavakra, the same personality. So that's the continuance of birth, and it reinforces that statement of Krishna's in Bhagavad Gita that, you know, he perpetually casts demoniac entities in demoniac species of life, although in this particular case, it's truncated because of the fact that it was a specific curse. They originally are doorkeepers in Vaikuntha, but at least it's continuing. You know, one sees the extreme demoniac personality being an extreme demoniac personality over three yugas. So very interesting. in the following breakdown, there are the wives of Vasudev. So those 9.5 verses are out of the way, no commentary except for that one. Then the next breakdown is the wives of Vasudev and their progeny. So as descendants in the Yadu dynasty, there's mention of his wife Ila, because she begot sons headed by Uruvalka, and they were considered to be chief personalities in the Yadu dynasty. So that was in the 49th verse. And then the interesting thing is, remember right in the beginning I brought up that Queen Marisha and her husband, they had produced those five daughters. So here we hear some of those daughters, they actually all get married to Vasudev. In fact, three of them are listed. So these are the sisters of Devaki. So there's Drita Deva in Dirvakshita. And Dirvakshita has nine sons headed by Gada. So these are all sons of Vasudev. There's Sahadeva, another sister of Devaki, eight sons. And Upadeva, 10 sons, begot by Ranjanya, headed by Ranjanya, sorry. So we've seen the number of sons of Vasudev. It's quite large. I mean, even if you count just from the three sisters of Devaki, there's 27 sons, and then come her eight sons, which brings it to 35. When I was very young, I remember it was common to hear of people having 10 or 11 children. It was, I think, during the 40s, 1940s and 1950s, 1930s, and earlier, it was not unusual for people to have 10, 11 children. I mean, even in our society, in just the previous century. But 35, it needs a longer lifespan, clearly, to be able to have that many children. So, and so this was in the Devapara Yuga. So hence the possibility. So already we're hearing of 35 sons. So in the womb of Devaki, Vasudev begot 8 sons. And it's said that these sons were equal to the Vasus. Now, actually, it was Vasu who produced 8 sons known as the Vasus. And they are named... so these are the personalities that there's a comparison with. They are named Drona, Prana, Dhruva, Arka, Agni, Dosha, Vastu, and Vibhavasu. That's from the 6th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So Krishna himself, he says that of the Vasus, he is Agni. So very great personalities. And so Vasudev's sons through Devaki, they compare to these Vasus. And Krishna's particularly highlighting Agni as one of the Vasus and says that of the Vasus, he's Agni. And he mentions that in Bhagavad Gita in the 10th chapter, 23rd verse. So Vasudev's sons through the womb of Devaki were married. Vasudev's sons through the womb of Devaki were named. So these are the sons. These were their names. Kirtiman, Sushena, Bhadrasena, Riju, Samardana, Bhadra, and Sankarshan. So these are the brothers of the 8th son who comes, who's Krishna. So Sankarshan, the 7th son, is actually, it's mentioned here as a serpent incarnation. So I was just reflecting on the fact that Srimad Bhagavatam is so extraordinary because we're getting that interplay between the heavenly realm, the earthly realm, and here we're actually hearing a serpent incarnation as coming from Vasudev through Devaki. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Adi Leela, in the section, there's mention who Sankarshan is, and this is how he's defined. He's understood to be the support for all jivas. So imagine the extraordinary personality that's just preceded Lord Krishna. He, Sankarshan, is the shelter of everything. He's wonderful in every respect, and his opulences are infinite. So that's from Chaitanya Charitamrita, how Sankarshan is described. So that Sankarshan is an expansion of pure goodness, and he's an expansion of Nityananda Balaram. So that's who that personality is. And then comes Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. So he's the 8th son of Devaki and Vasudev. So finally, all this has led to the appearance of Lord Krishna, and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur calls Krishna Svayam Bhagavan, and here Srila Prabhupada emphasizes that this is Krishna himself. So it's not an incarnation who appears as the 8th son of Devaki, it's Krishna himself. And since this was a very long reading and many names, and I've thought to read from the Bhagavad Purana, it's actually in poetic form, and it describes Krishna as the source of all incarnations, and this is a translation by Kalakanta Das. So it's the Bhagavad Purana, and I'm just going to read it. It's rather beautifully put because it's very concise. So after reading this extensive narration, I'm just going to do something very concise. Conceiving this mundane creation, Krishna has designed both actions and reactions bouncing back and forth through time. On seeing us entangled in our karma and travail, the Lord will often visit as a king might a jail. So this, in very cryptic, poetic form, will lead into what's coming, which will be an explanation of why Krishna has come. So, in fact, the particular world that we're residing in is going on because every living entity is actually a part and parcel of Lord Krishna, is utilizing the material energy. And so it means that they're under the grip of material energy. So I had this experience recently because, you know, there's some shopping that had to be done for furnishing a new apartment. So the minute one starts acquiring one little object, it awakens the whole serpent. One starts thinking of combination objects, or at least my mind does, combination objects. So I feel it's like you get caught in the grip of material energy because it captures the mind, just the focus on something material. So, and of course, the particular body that a particular, that each of us has is the result of the conditioned soul's activities. And because the super soul is the supporter of one's activities, it means that the super soul is the true reality, because the super soul is supporting what activities one can perform. And now, because one is revolving in the cycle of birth and death, under the direction of the Supreme Lord, just like, you know, we heard how he's controlled the birth of those two demoniac entities. So one can offer obeisances, or very respectful obeisances, to the central reality who's permitting everything, the super soul. So in actual fact, one shouldn't be misguided by the activities of the material world and forget that central point, the Supreme Lord. So I think that's what came across to me from reading this little section. And I'll continue the poem, or in poetic form, from the Bhagavad Purana. As blazing fire permeates the wood that it consumes, Lord Krishna, as the super soul, pervades this world of doom. He seems to be so many, though in fact he's only one, just as the thousand water pots reflect a single sun. In the end, it comes to that within the heart of every soul, the super soul observes the soul pursuing matter and the trouble that one incurs from doing that. So even Dantavakra and Hiranyaksha, it's considered that they performed a fruitive act by insulting the four Kumaras that led to that curse of them being cast into this material world. So hence, here we are in this world of doom. And anytime we pursue matter, the super soul is observing all the trouble that gets incurred. So those are some thoughts that came from this section. We've actually hit it exactly on the dot, 8:30. If there's some comment within the next 5 minutes, so I don't delay everybody, since I know it was very perhaps arduous hearing, although extremely pious account, many names.
Hare Krishna, thank you so much, Mataji, for a nice description. I'm very much happy to listen to your class. Same person in the different millennium, they are coming, in different yugas, they are coming as a enemy of the Lord. So, but here is Srila Rupa Goswami describing that mukti, you know, that bhava baddha chidetai spriyamina muktai bhavan vir aham dasha iti yatra vilupai. So here is he is saying that those who are, you know, if there is a five kinds of mukti, liberation, they already got mukti when you know, Hiranyakashyapu and Hiranyaksha killed by Nrisimhadev and Varaha, so they already got mukti. Again, how they can come here in different yugas, Even Ravana, when killed by Rama, he already got delivered because there's a description by Rupa Goswami that Sayujya Mukti is there that to merge into the body of the Lord directly, like Shishupal. Okay? And consider even more ghastly by the devotee, because when you merge in the impersonal effulgence of the Lord, some great devotee can come there and save you and make you qualified to go to home Vaikuntha planet directly, serve the Lord. But when the soul merges in the body of Lord, the soul is doomed to never achieve direct devotional service to the Lord. So here is, they are indirectly, they are even indirectly they are doing directly seva in front of the Lord. They are blaspheming to the Lord. It's Lord was taking as a devotional service, you know. So how is it possible that they already got a mukti? Again, how can they come here?
This is a very insightful question and very logical. So the question is, here we have these personalities that are demoniac, and they're appearing in different yugas. But from the description of liberation and the five kinds of liberation, the one example that was given was Shishupal, Sahuja Mukti, merging into the body of Krishna, invisible actually to everybody, I'll add. then since it's liberation, and the description that was read was that actually in that liberated stage, say it's the Brahman effulgence, I'll add, there's actually, it requires a devotee to come, and that person could then begin devotional service. But the question is, if the persons are liberated, how is it that they're actually coming again in a different yuga, again in this material world? Because liberation implies liberation from this material world and meaning. So a very interesting question, very logical. So the liberation into the Brahman effulgence is considered impersonal liberation. So say in the case of Shishupal, as you pointed out, Krishna took it that some service has been rendered, of course in a very unfavorable way, because it's, you know, the description was even from a child, he's constantly blaspheming Lord Krishna. So, but that makes sense that Krishna took it as some service, because we heard how Krishna doesn't actually feel pain from that kind of blaspheming, and neither does he feel pleasure. It's just very neutral. He accepts there's some recognition in the relationship, even though it's negative recognition. That kind of liberation would imply that the fruitive activities of the particular personality have ended. It means that their mentality, that they want to get a particular result, should have ended. So in Shishupal's case, he's wanting to kill Krishna. Dantavakra, same thing. You know, they're completely envious. But here we find that they're actually returning two more times. So where does that liberation stand? And that's the question, you know, is it not over? Is their mentality not ended? Because that's what's causing the being in the material world. It's the mentality of wanting to get a particular result. So, well, one thing to be said is that they were subject to a curse. And Krishna always fulfills the words of his particular devotee. So those personalities had to live out the curse all the way. And it would appear also that the desire, the negative desire remains. And that's what we know from the impersonal liberation. There's still at some point desire emerges again. one's not free from desire. So it appears that the mentality has got cleansed in the case of these personalities, but the desire remains. It's because it's only devotional service that can actually change mentality and bring about a transformation. So they were not free of that desire. And also Krishna has, which was the verse that I read, he has the prerogative. He can choose if he wants those, how long he wants those persons to stay there and if he wants them to be remain in liberated state. But his prerogative was to give them, fulfill the curse, put them again in two demoniac bodies, in two other yugas. They had a very long time that they had to pay for their particular blaspheme of devotees trying to enter Vaikuntha, meaning the four Kumaras. So the answer is Krishna's choice, fulfilling the words of his devotee, and also that the desire, the demoniac desire doesn't change. It requires devotional service to change that. And in fact, actually, it seems even according to Bhagavad Gita that the demoniac category remains demoniac perpetually. That's what Krishna says, perpetually. In their case, they're fortunate. It was three yugas, huge length of time, but three yugas, and then they were allowed to return to their position of devotional service. So, yeah, that's the response.
Yeah, still there's... I'm not that much, you know, intelligence. That's why I have another doubt that for the info, you know, they were not in favor of the devotional service, Shishupal and Dantava, whatever. And they killed by Krishna and they, you know, they got different liberation, different kinds of, I mean, not Samipya. Samipya is close to Krishna, always they can see. But we can see the Putana who wanted to kill Krishna, how she can, you know, get Goloka Vrindavan as a mother. So she also wanted to kill Krishna. So
this is very interesting. Okay. So here's a further elaboration of the question. We've got another demoniac entity which we're going to come to. So Putana. How is it that she actually, it wasn't just merely impersonal liberation, she actually entered Goloka, so how is that possible? And I think that's the crux of the matter, is desire. There was some desire to actually provide some direct service. I'm going to offer this milk to this baby. Of course, it's poisoned milk, being a demoniac entity and desire to kill, but with that desire to kill was the desire of, I'm offering this milk coming from me to this baby. And this baby is actually very beautiful. This baby is actually very powerful, but I'm going to offer milk to this baby. So just that desire is what allowed the transcendence, how I think I would understand. And of course, Krishna's great benediction because he has the prerogative of, you know, what particular birth the person will take. So Krishna's decision. So it fits.
Here I will read something from Advaitavada school.
From where?
Where they explain about his question. I don't know whether it will be true or not. Atma is the soul or the self that is identical with Brahma. It is not part of Brahma that ultimately dissolves into Brahma, but the whole Brahma itself. Atma is alone. When its reflection falls on avidya, it becomes the jiva and experience the world existence through the senses. So difficult.
Okay.
Difficult.
Sorry?
Brahma.
Where are you reading from?
Advaita Vada school.
Karuna Nidhi Prabhu, we'd like the reference. Where are you reading from?
Yeah, Advaita Vada school. School of Advaita Vada.
Okay. So, the verse that was read, or the section that was read, was just an explanation of how ignorance comes to cover the soul, and that the soul is Brahman or spirit. And hence, because of ignorance covering the soul, then one is a jiva. Thank you.
So, actually, when we are searching, so many things is coming. But Advaita Vada, it's not belong to ISKCON and our Gaudiya Sampradaya. So, I think we should not talk about that.
All right, so we're having, just for the general cleansing of the atmosphere and for anything transmitted into cyberspace, we also want that to be clean and to be known, that it's highlighted that this particular section that was read is coming from impersonal philosophy. We want it wiped out. It is the general consensus. Thank you very much. We're all personless, and pay our respectful obeisances to Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
This lecture. Actually, that's what I told is not be true, because this is a Mayavada philosophy. But Srila Prabhupada explained very nice way that he gave one example, like there is a parrot, okay? His color is green, and he is sitting on the tree, you know? You cannot distinguish whether a parrot is sitting or not, but still it is there. Prabhupada gave a very nice example. Similarly, also Prabhupada said, like, because we are the part and parcel of Krishna, it's just like a blazing fire, you know. We are the spark of that fire. And he is a Paramatma, the big, you know, in quantity sense, he is vast. We are the very minute. As long as we are attached to that, we have existence. As soon as we come out, we don't have. This fire is extinguished, like, you know, small spark of the big fire.
To bring it back to Vedic philosophy, the what was expressed was the actual position of the soul. And the metaphor that's used in the Vedas is that the individual spirit soul is like a small spark of the greater blazing fire that's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so thank you for the correction. We appreciate. And you also pointed out that it's attachment or breaking of attachment that allows... I guess allows was the word, I don't know. I'm not quite sure, but you mentioned something from the perspective of attachment of the individual soul. But yes, the attachment is what keeps one bound to this world. And I think that's something of what's going to lead into the next verse of why it is that Krishna's come. Because he's designed this material world in such a way that actually one is going through those actions and reactions, and the super soul is permitting it because that was the desire of the particular personality or persons, but the super soul is seeing the trouble it's causing. So we're going to see some of the trouble that particular personalities try to cause and how Krishna takes care of it in his personal form. So thank you very much.
Point. And the thing is, time over. Yeah, I know, just one example. In Bhagavad Gita, you see in Virat Roop, what happens? All the living, when Krishna exhibited his Virat Roop, you know, at that time everybody is coming into his mouth, entering, all living entities.
Yeah, that goes into a whole other topic, so I'll leave that one because it's not directly related to this, but thank you for the contribution. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
Thank you. Thank you.